The Sikha for Parsha Pekudei is in Lakutei Sikhas Chelek Vav, Volume 6. And it's the second Sikha on Parsha Pekudei. The Rebbe says that the conclusion of the entire book of Shmos, the Sefer of Shmos, are the words B'chol Ma'aseihem, in all their travels. And since everything in the Sefer, in Shmos, is as the Medrash says, that the whole Sefer of Shmos describes the exodus from darkness into light, Shabbo Yotzu Yisrael Me'aseilo Le'eira. So we have to conclude that this going from darkness to light is expressed primarily in the words B'chol Ma'aseihem, in all their travels. Because since those are the closing words, like the signature of the entire Sefer, those words must represent the essence of the Sefer. So we need to understand what is the connection between the travels and the going from darkness into light. We also have to understand what the Medrash means when it says that the whole Sefer of Shmos is going from darkness, leaving the darkness and going into light. Because right at the beginning of the Sefer, at the beginning of Shmos, we read not about coming out of Golus, but the opposite. Haboyim Mitzrayimah. We read about the family of Yaakov and his children who came to Mitzrayim, who went down to Mitzrayim, which was the beginning of going into Golus. So how can the Medrash say that the entire Sefer of Shmos describes the coming out of Jews, leaving the darkness, going into light? So we'll understand this by first explaining the simple meaning of the words B'chol Ma'aseihem, in all their travels. Here the word Ma'aseihem does not literally refer to the traveling time, but rather to the places from which they traveled. So it was actually the encampments that are called Ma'aseihem, that are called travels, as Rashi says, because the encampment was a place from which they then packed up and left, traveled. Therefore, the place itself is called travels. So this we need to understand. These encampments in the desert, the Gemara says that since they camped according to God's instruction and then broke camp also according to God's instruction, so while they were camped, being that it was a divine commandment, a divine instruction, their encampment was permanent until such time as they were told to break camp. So the question is, if these encampments were permanent by God's instruction, why are they called travels? Just because eventually they would break camp and leave this place. But while they were there permanently. They really settled in because God told them to camp there. So we have to say that when the Torah refers to the places in which they camped with the word masois, when the Torah describes it as travels rather than encampments, it is not to say that the stay in the encampment was temporary and therefore there was something wrong, something missing, something not quite real about the encampment, but the exact opposite. Because the encampment was a preparation for a further journey, therefore the encampment was not only a place where they stayed, but it was also the launching site, so to speak, of the travels, and so it had both virtues. It was a resting place and the beginnings of the travel. So it took credit for the eventual travels as well. What does all this mean? So the Rebbe explains. We have spoken many times that everything in the world, all physical existence, is a means to an end. They don't exist for themselves. The physical world doesn't exist for itself. It exists as a means towards an end. But that's not true of the Jewish people. A Jew is not a means to an end, but is an end in himself. And every aspect of a Jew's life, everything that a Jew does, is not a means towards an end, but rather is the end itself. That's why it says, "Bishvil Yisrael u'bishvil haTorah," that the world was created for the Jew and for Torah. So it's not that the Jew is a means towards an end, but rather everything else was created as a means, as a tool for the Jew and for Torah. From this we can understand that all the travels, every stage of growth and development in a Jew's life, as it says, Yehu Michayel Ochoyo, that we have to continually grow from level to level, which means that although each level is a preparation, a hagdama, an introduction and a preparation for the higher level that is going to follow, yet it doesn't mean that the previous level was only a tool, a stepping stone, or a servant level that exists only for the benefit or for the purpose of the higher level. But rather, each level that a Jew is at, even before he grows up, goes on to the higher level, each level is in itself a complete and total avodah. It justifies itself and is not only a stepping stone to the higher level. For example, when a Jew refines and elevates the physical objects of this world by using the physical objects l'shem shamayim, he eats, for example, he eats with a heavenly purpose, not only because he has an appetite, not only because he's hungry. He eats with a heavenly purpose. Since he exists to do mitzvahs, and he needs strength to do mitzvahs, so he eats in order to have the strength, in order to be able to serve God. So he elevates the food, he elevates the eating, into something godly. Or even more, a higher level, when he takes a physical object and makes a mitzvah out of it. Like making matzah for Pesach out of flour, out of wheat. So this effect that the Jew has on the physical object in turning it into something godly, the effect brings about a change from the time that the mitzvah is performed and into the future. The whole world is created right from the start only for the sake of having a Jew make of it a dwelling place for God. That's its original purpose and its original condition on which it is created. Yet, since the world is only a means, the physical object is only a means towards that end, therefore, the time and the condition of this physical object before it is used for a mitzvah doesn't have a justification in and of itself, and therefore it exists only on the condition that it will in the future be used for a mitzvah and be elevated and refined, and is therefore only a preparation for that mitzvah. So the existence of the food before it is eaten l'shem shamayim, or the existence of the flour or the wheat before it becomes matzah, is a state of preparation, a state of waiting to become that which it is meant to be. But at the moment, it is not yet what it is meant to be. And so the physical object can correctly be described as a means to an end. This is not the case with a Jew. Since the essence is the Jew himself in all the activities and all aspects of a Jew's life, therefore through the growing going from strength to strength, when the lower level brings you to a higher level, what happens is that not only is the higher level achieved or attained, but that by attaining the higher level, we complete and fulfill the purpose of the lower level. So that the lower level itself is elevated into the higher level. We might perhaps use the example that a child grows into adulthood. Childhood is not a preparation for adulthood. It's not that childhood has no purpose and no benefit. It is only waiting to become an adult. That's not the case. When a child grows into an adult, the child himself becomes the adult, and by becoming the adult, the child fulfills the purpose and the function of a child. Whereas the object that is used for a mitzvah, before it is used for a mitzvah, it doesn't serve any function at all. And when it is used for a mitzvah, it stops being what it was. It no longer is a physical object. It now becomes the object of godliness, an object of a mitzvah. So that the previous state is canceled once it becomes a mitzvah. Whereas by a Jew, every step, every level that a Jew is on, that itself is part of the purpose, part of the essential kavana of creation, and not a means towards an end. Because even though he's going to go up to a higher level, when he does go to the higher level, he takes with him the level that he was on before, and it itself becomes the higher level, and by becoming higher, it becomes fulfilled and completed, not rejected or discarded. And this is the meaning, the explanation of the words b'chol ma'aseihem, that every encampment, wherever a Jew camped, not only on his own level, in other words, the growth, the gradual growth of a person, of a Jew in his personal life, but also the ma'aseis that were given or instructed by God. So he comes to a certain level, and this is where God wants him or God puts him, and yet from that level he will eventually break camp and travel onwards to an even higher level. When he does that, then the encampment itself becomes elevated in that further travel. And although this elevation, in fact, in actuality, comes only after you break camp and start again to travel, but since the camping itself was a necessary preparation in order to be able to travel further, therefore in its very essence and hidden in the encampment was also the benefits or the virtues of the level that will be accomplished or achieved in the future travel. On the pasuk, Eilem Masi Bnei Yisrael Asher Yotzu Me'eretz Mitzrayim, these are the travels of the Jewish people when they came out of Egypt. The Alter Rebbe explains that it says Masi Lashon Rabim. It is a plural, the travels, and this means that with every one of the trips, there were actually 42 travels, 42 times that the Jews broke camp and traveled in the desert. Each time of these 42 travels, they were going out of Egypt, even though they physically left Egypt only on the first travel, when they went from Ramses to Sukkot. But that's only superficially. But in essence, every time they broke camp in their 42 travels, each time they were leaving Egypt. And that's because until they came to the Jordan, until they came to Yericho, they had not yet completely left the state of Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim meaning restrictions and limitations. And with every one of the 42 travels, they further left the state of Egypt. So from this we understand that there's a difference between the travels and the encampment, or the difference between the traveling and the encampment is like the difference between being in Mitzrayim and leaving Mitzrayim. At the time of the travels, since with each travel, with each trip, with each trek, they got closer to the promised land, to the Yarden, so they were constantly leaving the state of Egypt, which means Geula. Leaving Mitzrayim, which means Geula. Every time they camped, when they settled down and were not moving towards the Yarden, they were not getting any closer to the Yarden, although even at that time they were on their way, even though they weren't actually traveling, but they were on their way to the conclusion of their travels, which took 40 years, which they had to be in the desert. So all of that was in the direction of going to the Yarden, to Eretz Yisrael. Yet the actual campment was not a movement towards Israel, but rather interruption of the travel, where they were being held back from Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, it represents, at least visibly, it represents a state of Golus, where you have to sit and wait before you can go towards the Geula. From this we understand that when the Pasuk refers to the encampments by the name Mas'ehem, the Torah calls it a travel, this is telling us that the Geula happens even while we are encamped. Not only because every moment that goes by we get closer to the Geula, to the coming out of the Midbar, since there's a limited time to how long the Golus lasts, there was a limited time to how long they were going to be in the desert. So with every passing moment, the time comes closer to the moment when we will be out of the Golus. But also, the camping itself is part of the Geula. Because since the purpose of Golima Me'atzeinu, the whole purpose of being in Golus, of being away from our land, is only in order to achieve a higher level of godliness, which will take place with the Geula. And we can't get to that higher level of godliness without first going through the Golus. So even though the Golus itself seems to be only a preparation to the Geula, as a stepping stone, as a means to an end, but the truth is that when it comes to the Jew who is going through the Golus, here the Golino, the Golus itself, in its inner essence, in its inner purpose, is in fact an act of Geula. According to this, we can also understand the words B'chol Ma'aseihem being the closing, the signature, and the conclusion of the entire Sefer that is called Ve'eleh Shmeis B'nei Yisrael. This is the names of the children of Israel. And that comes after the entire Sefer Bereishis, where we are told about the Aves, not the children of Israel, but the patriarchs of Israel. The Aves, the patriarchs, were higher than the world, which means that they were higher than the concealment which the world represents, the concealment of godliness. And since the whole purpose of creation is that the Tachtim, the lowest world, should become a dwelling place for God, that's why the Maisa Aves, the events in the lives of the patriarchs, the things that happened to them, were only a sign and a preparation for the children, paving the way for the children that the children will be able to acquire, to achieve, to reach the promised land, which the parents did not. And this is the sequence of the stories and the events that happen, that are described in the book of Shmos, that in the beginning we are told how we came down to a lower level, Yirid Olamata, how the Bnei Yisrael came to Egypt, and how the darkness of the Golos began. And after that we are told how godliness was brought down into the world, even into Egypt, to where it brought about the exodus from Egypt. And then how godliness came down through the giving of the Torah. And then how godliness was brought down further by the building of the Mishkan, the construction of the Mishkan. So after all of this, when the Torah tells us what was the ultimate achievement, Uchved Hashem Moleyeth HaMishkan, that after the Mishkan was put together, constructed properly, and initiated, and anointed, and made holy, the ultimate conclusion was that God's presence filled the Mishkan. So here the Torah tells us immediately with the words, B'chol Ma'aseihem, by describing the encampments as travels, that also the places where we stopped are also called movement, are also called travel, that this highest level that we achieved at the conclusion of Sefer Shmos is in essence, it existed even at the beginning of the Sefer, at the beginning of Shmos, where it says, where it talks about the Jews coming to Mitzrayim. Because that coming into Golos, that coming into Mitzrayim, was in essence a Geula. Because the entire Sefer, as the Medrash says, the entire Sefer of Shmos describes the coming out of darkness into light. So the whole point of Sefer Shmos, according to the conclusion of the final words of V'chol Ma'aseihem, is that the entire Golos described in the book of Shmos, the coming down into Egypt and the suffering of Egypt and the darkness of Egypt, which seems to be merely a stepping stone and a preparation for the Geula, is much more than that, because everything that happens to a Jew has a content of its own and is justified within itself, so that the coming down into Mitzrayim was itself a part of the Geula, and not only a stepping stone to the Geula, as is the case with every level, every condition that a Jew may find himself in. To explain this idea that a Jew is not a means to an end, and therefore whatever level a Jew is on is self-justifying, even though it will go on to become a higher level, here in a footnote on page 237, the Rebbe mentions that even when a Jew sins, the essence of the sin, even while he is sinning, is the tshuva that will follow. Now, even though the sin itself, which goes against God's will, cannot be redeemed, because the only way to correct the sin is by rejecting it. Breaking it is the only way to fixing it. That's concerning the sin itself. But the effect that it had on the Jew, the fact that a Jew found himself in darkness, or that he had gone down a level further from godliness, that is only because of the tshuva that must inevitably come at the end. And through this tshuva, we reveal the justification and the purpose of the moment when the Jew found himself in the darkness, in the condition of sin. So the sin itself exists temporarily, but then when you move on to a higher level, it is rejected completely. It is completely destroyed, and that's how we move on to an improvement. Whereas the effect that it had on the Jew, every stage, every step, every experience that a Jew has since in the end the Jew is eternal and must in the end do tshuva, the moments along the way are all part of that tshuva. Because unlike the sin, the Jew doesn't end. And therefore he can't be a means to an end. The experience of having sinned can't be a means to an end, where the experience is discarded in order to go up to the higher level. That's true of the sin, but not of the Jew's experience of the sin, or the effect that it had on the Jew. The effect that the sin had on the Jew, that it dragged him down and brought him in contact with unholiness, that contact is itself a necessary part of the tshuva. And when the person does tshuva, then that experience itself will become part of that godliness, will become part of the holiness. The sin becomes the mitzvah. And this helps us understand why it is that through tshuva, out of love, the sin is erased and removed retroactively. If in fact the tshuva fixes the sin, so the fixing is the byproduct of the tshuva, it is the effect, and tshuva is the cause. And philosophically, a cause precedes its effect. So how can it have an effect retroactively? But the explanation is, since right from the start, the sin existed, as far as the Jew is concerned, not the sin in per se, but the sin as it affects the Jew, that existed only because of the tshuva. Therefore, when the tshuva comes, we retroactively come to realize that the sin that existed previously was really part of this tshuva. So we're not rejecting, we're not jettisoning that experience, but we're adding it to the experience of, to the accumulative experience of godliness, so that a Jew, no matter what level he's on, wherever he may find himself, even if he is affected by the sins that he has committed, he has to reject the sin. But his state, even while he is sinning, afal pi shechota yisrohu, even while he sins, he is yisro, and therefore the effect of the sin on him is merely a step towards the tshuva, which will be included in the tshuva and not rejected in favor of the tshuva. So that even that temporary experience of being in contact with sin is not a means to an end, but it is itself part of the end. It is part of the tshuva, which inevitably must come. And on an even higher level, the Rebbe says that the Jew exists as a self-justified existence, not as a means to an end. But we find the expression in the Gemara, I was created to serve my Creator. Or even stronger, I was created only to serve my Creator. So is a Jew a means to an end, or is he the end in itself? So the Rebbe says that since, in essence, the Jew and God, the Jew and the Creator, are really one, so the fact that the Jew was created to serve his Creator, that is the essence of the Jew himself. So it's not like he is he leaves his existence in order to serve God. He serves God by his existence, with his existence. Unlike all other physical things, all other creations in the world that serve God by giving up and surrendering their existence. And so this is what the Rebbe is saying, that when a Jew stops along the way towards Geula, and it seems like he's being held back from Geula, and that he's being delayed, and that instead of going towards Geula, he is sinking into the Golus, the Jew has to know that no step, no experience, no encampment along on the road towards Geula is anything but Geula itself.